opium wars that the British waged because the policy of the British East India Company in the 19th century.
Pues usted está ampliando, nota que este banco data a los años en que la empresa inglesa East Indian Company peleaba lo que se conocía entonces como las guerras del opio. La empresa llevaba opio y otras drogas cultivadas en la India a la China, donde eran usadas para destruir la sociedad, quebrantar la moral del pueblo chino como una forma de hacer la guerra, pero también de conducir un negocio muy lucrativo.
We have to remember that the families of the U.S. banking establishment.
Tarpe dice que hay que recordar de que las grandes familias estadounidenses asociadas a las instituciones financieras como los Forbes, Peabody y otras eran socias de la empresa East India Company.
We just have to remember the CIA is responsible for the vast majority of drug trafficking.
Tarpe dice que hay que recordar de que la Central de Inteligencia Norteamericana es responsable de la mayoría del tráfico de drogas. Víctor Quintana es un investigador residente en el estado de Chihuahua, en el noreste de México.
Yo tengo la sospecha de que siempre ha habido circuitos legales de cuello blanco, ilegales, por donde se ha ido lavando el dinero. Yo creo definitivamente que es una pista interesante a seguir. Por más que en este momento la hagan para atacar a un banco de capital anglochino o anglofino, que es el más poderoso del mundo.
Quintana dice que se oye mucho ruido sobre lo que dice el Senado norteamericano, pero ese ruido no se traduce en arrestos, ni juicios, ni castigos contra los peces gordos del narcotráfico.
Pues se habla mucho de esto, pero son únicamente notas trascendidas. Nunca tenemos realmente una investigación judicial al respecto. No hemos visto que el gobierno mexicano o una acción conjunta de los gobiernos norteamericano y mexicano para decir, seguimos la pista de lavado de dinero y aquí están los responsables.
Quintana subraya que después de examinar la cuestión no le queda otra cosa que concluir que los capos mexicanos están al servicio de los grandes banqueros.
Yo pienso que el Chapo Guzmán, a final de cuentas, es un empleado de más alto nivel, si tú quieres, muy bien remunerado, pero es un empleado de los grandes lavadores de dinero que no están escondidos en la sierra y que están por ahí muy a gusto detrás de un escritorio en una gran oficina.
El investigador mexicano Víctor Quintana concluye diciendo que solo la legalización de las drogas, como ya se plantea en Uruguay y otros estados de América Latina, pondrá fin a la pesadilla que viven millones de personas hoy día en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Un indígena muerto y decenas de heridos fue el resultado de una jornada de represión del ejército colombiano contra los pueblos originarios que exigen la desmilitarización de sus territorios. Pueblos indígenas del departamento del Cauca, cansados de estar en medio de los enfrentamientos entre la guerrilla y las fuerzas armadas, exigen a ambos actores armados a salir de sus comunidades. En los últimos días, miles de indígenas vienen desmontando trincheras y expulsan a soldados de cuarteles militares. El presidente Juan Manuel Santos ordenó el martes al ejército retomar las bases y amenaza con procesar a los indígenas judicialmente. Sin embargo, el miércoles grupos indígenas ocuparon la base militar de Guasanó, ubicada entre Toribío y Caloto, y obligaron a los militares a desalojarla. La medida ocurrió después de que los militares mataran a tiros a un joven. El comandante Héctor Segura afirmó a la prensa que se trató de un error.
Fue un error. Y por eso está ahí el CTI, mire, ahí está el CTI para abrir las investigaciones.
Alberto Calambas, consejero mayor del Cabildo de Caldoso en el municipio de Toribío, departamento del Cauca, rechaza que el joven asesinado no acatara una orden de control militar en la zona. Además, afirma que los indígenas dieron al ejército 3 días para salir de sus tierras.
No fue un retén porque lo mataron dentro de una vereda que llama el Rosario. Le faltaba 3 casas para llegar a la casa. Él ya era a las 5 de la mañana y acá a las 5 de la mañana estamos en los días largos, o sea que a las 5 ya está de día. Y lo mataron. Lo mató la fuerza pública y lo asesinaron vilmente a sangre fría.
La reportera de Telesur, Angie Camacho, asegura que decenas de indígenas colombianos mantienen rodeada la zona donde se encuentran los militares que dispararon contra el campesino.
Un retén militar en el municipio de Caldono. Se calcula que son aproximadamente 100 indígenas los que le han hecho una especie de círculo a los 30 militares que habrían participado presuntamente en la muerte de este hombre. Ellos los llevan hasta un punto muy cercano aquí a Toribio. Caribío, donde se hará una especie de audiencia pública para que ellos, ante organismos internacionales, ¿por qué le dispararon a este indígena que pasaba desarmado por este punto? E incluso esto ya le costó el puesto al comandante de la tercera división del Cauca, el comandante Miguel Pérez, que fue relevado de su cargo y quien además deberá responder por qué los militares le dispararon a este campesino.
Camacho afirma que la protesta para exigir la salida de los militares se ha multiplicado en 6 municipios y que la comunidad afrocolombiana y mestiza se ha sumado a las demandas de los pueblos originarios. El representante de la Mesa Campesina Departamental del Cauca, Cristóbal Guamanga, dijo al informativo Pacífica que los pueblos están cansados de la guerra y el desplazamiento.
Ya la situación en Toribío y Santander hay desplazados, en Caloto hay desplazados, en Miranda hay desplazados. Y ya no hay comida, la comida se está acabando porque ya llevamos 2 meses de agudización del conflicto en este norte del departamento del Cauca. Si no para la situación de guerra, pues la cosa se va a poner todavía mucho más difícil porque, según los militares, la guerra apenas comienza.
Guamanga señala que el conflicto armado en Colombia tiene sus raíces en la pobreza y desigualdad.
En Colombia hay un conflicto político, social y armado de más de 50 años que los gobiernos no han querido sentarse a una mesa en serio y a resolver el problema de la insurgencia y el narcotráfico, que son, según el gobierno colombiano, la culpa de la guerra en este país. Para nosotros, el movimiento campesino, la subversión y el narcotráfico no son el problema, son una consecuencia del problema. El verdadero problema es el hambre y la miseria. Ese es el que crea cualquier montón de dificultades que el gobierno ha querido a todo momento resolverlo a punta de fusil, a tiros. Por eso aquí matan sindicalistas, matan profesores, matan estudiantes, matan campesinos, matan indígenas, y todo aquel que diga la verdad y reclame sus derechos es víctima del terrorismo de Estado. Eso es lo que pasa acá en Colombia. Y en este momento el movimiento indígena reclama que se cumpla el derecho internacional humanitario y que se cumpla los protocolos 1 y 2 de Ginebra y que se cumplan los derechos humanos, porque están acantonándose los militares colombianos en medio de la población civil, y como hay insurgencia, hay enfrentamientos, y los muertos y los heridos son de la población civil, y son los bienes protegidos como las escuelas, los colegios, los acueductos, las canchas de fútbol, son las perjudicadas en los enfrentamientos que se dan continuos en el departamento del Cauca.
Cristóbal Guamanga dice que las acusaciones que pretenden vincular a los pueblos indígenas en resistencia con la guerrilla son usadas para deslegitimar la protesta social. Recuerda que los grupos paramilitares frecuentemente asesinan a líderes sociales acusados por el gobierno de ser guerrilleros. Con homenajes públicos, el pueblo sudafricano conmemoró el miércoles el cumpleaños número 94 de Nelson Mandela, el primer presidente negro del país africano. Mandela es símbolo de resistencia de las mayorías negras en Sudáfrica, que por casi medio siglo sufrieron la segregación racial instaurada por el gobierno de minoría blanca de origen británico y holandés. Nelson Mandela formó parte de la lucha armada de liberación lanzada por el Consejo Nacional Sudafricano, calificado en su momento por gobiernos occidentales como agrupación terrorista. Por su actividad contra el sistema supremacista, Mandela pasó 27 años preso. 4 años después de ser liberado, fue electo presidente en 1994. La situación de las grandes mayorías negras en Sudáfrica sigue siendo precaria, viven en la pobreza con altos niveles de desempleo y sin acceso a la tierra, mientras la minoría blanca mantiene el control económico del país. Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Freak Radio Santa Cruz needs your help. Freak Radio Santa Cruz needs your help. It costs a lot of money to run an unlicensed radio station and keep the independent information, music, and expression going 24 hours a day for the last 10 years. Please consider donating to your favorite pirate radio station by making a check payable to Free Radio Santa Cruz, or just FRSC, mail it to P.O. Box
7811,
Santa Cruz, California 95061. You could also PayPal through our website, www.freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. Freak Radio Santa Cruz, your help.
Again, make all checks payable to FRSC and mailmen to P.O. Box
7811,
Santa Cruz, California 95061, or PayPal at freakradio.org. Freak Radio Santa Cruz needs your help. Help us!
Come along, come along. The end of Vietnam War. Dirty smart bombs and napalms and U.S. Army whores. Come along, come along. Hey, baby, don't be late. Come along, come along. Let's celebrate Watergate. Come along, come along. Poor Nixon's in his home. Come along, come along. Sitting under a teapot dome. Come along, come along. Forget their heroin. Smoke some grass and relax. And forget your bloody wine. Come along, oh Americans. And let's be number two. Number one was a pissy-ass act we all went through. Come along. Save the whales and save the humans too, and the ladies and the fairies and the communist true blue. Come along out of the Cold War, the planet is still here. We got to save our mama, nothing more we have to fear. Come along and let the people and the other species rare breathe again in vasty space, the cleaned up U.S. air. Come along without your fission. And if you fusion choose, first make sure you don't burn up the very ground you use. Come along without your pistol, without your policeman's badge, secret infiltrators shooting up themselves in colored rage. Come along without your police state, come along without your power. Come along just as you are, really naked for an hour. You have all your life to wear your clothes, 90 years to milk your cow. Come along and breathe together and conspire to be here now. Come along, come along. The hour is at hand when all this mighty nation that smokes across the land can wake up again and shake off our Indochina scream and hear 800,000 orphan babies they all dream. Come along, oh mighty nation, and get down on your knees and ask the gods and bodhisattvas to forgive us if they please. We have killed 2 million people, we have wounded millions more, and 15 million refugees are waiting at our door. So come along humble and act to please mankind. Cut down on our electric whose dim light has made us blind to the stars and all the birdies and the coyotes and the babes we have seen without the seeing, buried under brimstone waves. Come along, come along. The war is over now. Indochina's independent and we are friends with Mao. The war is over, yeah. The war is over here. And now begins the battle to make our souls more dear. Come along, come along. And empty out your mind of all the American garbage we cast out in the wind. All the law and order chatter that the gangsters sold us fools. All the military clatter and their costly useless tools. We need more farms and farmers. We need to work the land. We need to get down on our knees and seed with our own hand. The earth we stand on top of, the earth we have bombed out. Come along and lift the sky with holy shout. Yeah, come along in Tallahassee, come along in Idaho. Kick the military cops out, let all secret agents go to the unemployment office down here with us below.
And that was Allen Ginsberg. Don't know what the name of that was, but I think it was, it could have been Come Along, because he certainly was asking us all to do that. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you just tuned in, this is Robert Norris. I do a two-hour show now called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And the weather is pretty hot today, so maybe time to take it all off, except perhaps for a bathrobe. The idea of the bathrobe is Santa Cruz doesn't let homeless people sleep. In fact, the police are doing their best to destroy the homeless encampments, or so they're telling the Sentinel and the city in news releases on their website. Illegal campsites is, of course, the target, but what they don't tell you is that every campsite in the city is illegal. Every place a homeless person tries to sleep is illegal. There is space in the shelter for zero people in terms of a walk-in shelter. There are waiting lists that are full for weeks, and there's 46 spaces in the Pauley Loft somewhere down the road for those who get in there. It's a disgrace and a shame, not so much that there isn't more shelter, but that people are being criminalized for doing what they need to do. People need housing. They don't need shelter. So I'm not a big fan of creating more shelter space, more warehousing, more prison-like conditions, more abusive, authoritarian, organized shoveling people from place to place. But anyways, that's why I use this bathrobe description and call myself Bathrobespierre. Robespierre, of course, was the French revolutionary guy who got executed, but tried to do something about the economic exploitation, even at that early date of the middle class, against the mass of the nation and the poor people. He tried to institute laws that fixed prices so that people could actually afford to buy bread and so forth. But either he didn't go far enough, or, well, we're finding ourselves in situations that are not particularly good either these days in terms of huge amounts of power and wealth in the hands of very few and everyone else struggling to survive and losing their homes, their jobs, their lives to a series of rackets by those who have rigged the system in advance. And the people that suffer this most are often those at the bottom who look for a place every night to sleep. And then when they find it, get woken up by the police, harassed, have their property taken, and face criminal charges. That's the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, also the state penal code 647E that's used to criminalize people, and it's still used. So, welcome. Let's begin with a little more music. Ginsberg is kind of like music, in a way. I found this ancient tape that I've never played on the air, at least not that I can remember. It's got some great old political songs, and it's more of a blast from the past again. I do a lot of blasting from the past these days, so feel free to complain by calling in 427-3772, area code 831, 427-3772. And you can also email me at rnorse3, like a Norseman 3, at hotmail.com. And I will hope to read what you say, and who knows, maybe I'll even read it on the air and embarrass you in front of the entire community. But not if you ask me not to. Anyway, let's hear a little of this and a little of that, and I'll be back.
Hush now, little baby, Sandman's drawing near. Nobody's gonna hurt you, Dad will be right here. And Daddy's got a .38, he's got an M16, he's got a 12-gauge shotgun and a Thompson submachine, a Magnum and a Mauser and a stash of TNT. Nobody's gonna hurt you. Hush now, go to sleep.
People of Vancouver, either you are closing your eyes to a situation you do not wish to acknowledge, or you are unaware of the caliber of disaster indicated by the presence of a Trident submarine in your neighborhood. You got trouble, folks. Right here, I say trouble, right near this city. Why, sure, it's a beautiful town. I'm proud to say, always mighty proud to say, I consider with the mountains and the trees, sun on the sea, it's golden. Help you cultivate a calm soul, a peaceful mind, and a mellow style. Did you ever take a walk around Stanley Park when the sunset behind Point Grey?
Well, just as I say, it's pretty as a puppy in a wagon, 60 miles downstream at Bangor Wash. Wouldn't you know, they got an engine straight from hell, the Trident Sub. First big step on the road to the depths of an isle. I say there'll be some little war in the Middle East, and look out, here we go. And the next thing you know, the Reds are in, and of course the Yanks are too. Talking like a some old late show western, just in time for a John Wayne gesture. Not a full-scale nuclear war, just kind of a nuclear warning shot. So the Reds get nervous. In return, they take aim at Bangor Wash. Make your blood cold, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. They got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 warheads on a missile, a missile on a submarine, and it's anchored just down the coast. Now, there's a target right on the Puget, and that means us.
Us?
Us. Oh, we got trouble.
Oh, we got trouble.
Right near the city.
Right near the city.
With a capital T-R-I-D-N-T, the Trident II.
Trident II.
They're putting a bullseye.
Putting a bullseye.
On the city.
On the city.
And, folks, we gotta wipe it out before the Russians do. Okay, now you can join us in the singing. This is like we're doing the anti-nuclear remake of the Music Man here. I'm Robert Preston. Okay, you answer antiphonally. I go, oh, we got trouble. Right near the city.
Right near the city.
Okay, that's pretty good. You ready for the dancing part? Here's the dancing part. Are you ready? Oh, we got trouble.
Oh, we got trouble.
All right. Oh, we got trouble.
Oh, we got trouble.
Right near the city.
Great.
With a capital T-R-I-D-N-T, the Trident II.
Trident II.
They're putting a bullseye. On the city.
On the city.
And folks, we gotta wipe it out before the Russians do. Now, I know all you folks are thoughtful people, so I'm gonna be perfectly frank. Do you wanna know what kind of conversation goes on these days in the Pentagon halls? They're talking about first strike.
No.
Limited exchange.
What?
Winning a nuclear war. And bragging all about how they're going to run the whole thing from their special shelters in one fine day. They'll leave those shelters, head into a glorious sunrise, having wiped out the commie menace, every woman, child, and man. And the only shot that the Russians got was the very first shot they fired. Bangor Wash. Friends, excuse me if I skip the party. Trident.
Oh, we got Trident.
Right near the city.
Right near the city.
With a capital T-R-I-D-N-T, the Trident II.
Trident II.
They're putting a bullseye.
Putting a bullseye.
On the city.
On the city.
And folks, we gotta wipe it out before the Russians do.
Right here, right Bangor, they've got Trident.
That's your part.
Trident.
People of Vancouver, heed the telltale signs of warning. Are your leaders going on and on and on about our commitments to NATO?
Yep.
Are they talking about increasing our deterrent force to better deter the deterrence of the Russian deterrent force?
Uh-huh.
Have they been sneaking any little submarines up the Strait of Juan de Fuca? If so, we got trouble.
Oh, well, we got trouble.
Right near the city.
Right near the city.
With the capital T-R-I-D-N-T, the Trident II.
Trident II.
They're putting a bullseye.
Putting a bullseye.
On the city.
Oh, shit.
And folks, we gotta wipe it out before the Russians do.
Right here at Bangor, they've got Tridents, Tridents, Tridents. Just the latest thing from science.
But this game of building arms is played by two. Call it progress, call it violence, but the Russians gonna have Trident with a capital T.
With a capital T.
That rhymes with C.
That rhymes with C.
That stands for cruise.
That stands for cruise.
And that was a cute little number from Boston's Home Remedy for Nuclear War and Related Ailments. And, you know, I can't tell you more than that. That's what's on the tape, and it doesn't come with any further description. But the song itself sings for itself, and it's worth playing. It's interesting. If you go to Wikipedia, you find a little article on nuclear weapons in the United States. And the United States, the boys and girls in the Pentagon still have them more than any other country, enough to destroy the world numerous times over. Here's some of the background. The U.S. was the first country to develop nuclear weapons, is the only country to have used them in warfare with the separate bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki in World War II. Before and during the Cold War, it conducted over 1,000 nuclear tests and developed many long-range weapons delivery systems. Until November 1962, the vast majority of U.S. tests were above ground. After the acceptance of the Partial Test Ban Treaty, all testing was regulated underground in order to prevent the dispersal of nuclear fallout. Between 1940 and 1996, the U.S. spent at least $8.63 trillion in present-day terms on nuclear weapons development. As of February 2006, over $1.2 billion in compensation was paid to U.S. citizens exposed to nuclear hazards as a result of the U.S. nuclear weapons program. And by 1998, at least $759 million was paid to the Marshallese Islanders in compensation for their exposure to U.S. nuclear testing. The United States currently maintains an arsenal of 5,113 warheads. I think that's been reduced, but still far too many, and facilities for their construction and design, though many of the Cold War facilities have since been deactivated and are sites for environmental remediation, which I assume means cleaning up. And then there's a development history about the Manhattan Project, the Cold War, and the post-Cold War. After the end of the Cold War, following the dissolution of the Soviet Union, which hadn't happened by the time this song you just heard was played, the U.S. nuclear program was heavily curtailed, halting its program of nuclear testing, ceasing in the production of new nuclear weapons, and reducing its stockpile by half by the mid-90s under President Bill Clinton. Many of its former nuclear facilities were shut down. Their sites became targets of intense environmental remediation. And no doubt the money has now been put into better projects like invading Iraq, bombing Afghanistan and Pakistan, and so forth. Yes, the more things change, the worse they get, it sometimes seems. Much of the former efforts toward the production of weapons became involved in the program of stockpile stewardship, attempting to predict the behavior of aging weapons without using full-scale nuclear testing. Increased funding also was put into anti-nuclear proliferation programs, such as helping states of the former Soviet Union eliminate their former nuclear sites and assist Russia in their efforts to inventory and secure their inherited nuclear stockpile. As of February 2006, over $1.2 billion were paid under the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act of 1990 to U.S. citizens exposed to nuclear hazards as a result of the U.S. nuclear weapons program. By 1998, I mentioned again, the Marshallese Islanders got a big chunk. During the presidency of George W. Bush, and especially after the 11th September terrorist attacks, 2001, rumors have circulated in major news sources the U.S. has been considering design of new nuclear weapons, bunker-busting nukes, and potentially the resumption of nuclear testing for reasons of stockpile stewardship, and non-nuclear missile defense has received additional funding as well. Statements by the U.S. government in 2004, however, imply that by 2012 the arsenal will drop to around 5,500 total warheads. And I believe that there was a START treaty that reached the Senate. I don't know if it was actually passed under Obama last year. I guess I'll be looking that up. This is sort of a quick and dirty look at one of the sort of websites I tend to go to. I don't know actually how accurate this is. Best to look at a number of websites, of course. Here's a story about the current status. The United States is one of the five recognized nuclear powers under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Act. As of September 2009, it possessed 5,113 warheads operationally deployed in active reserve or held in inactive storage. This figure compares to a peak of 31,000, that's six times as many, 2,225 total warheads in 1967, and 22,217 in 1989. And that does not include several thousand warheads that have been retired and scheduled for dismantlement. In 2009 and 2010, the administration of Barack Obama declared policies that would invalidate the Bush-era policy for use of nuclear weapons and its motions to develop new ones. First, in a prominent 2009 speech, U.S. President Obama outlined a goal of a world without nuclear weapons. Yakka, yakka, yakka. To that goal, U.S. President Barack Obama and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, no longer president, of course, we've got Putin now, I believe, signed a new START treaty on April 8, 2010, to reduce the number of active nuclear weapons to 2,200 from 2,200 down to 1,550. That same time, Obama also revised U.S. policy on the use of nuclear weapons in a nuclear posture review required of all presidents, declaring for the first time that the U.S. would not use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear NPT-compliant states. That's non-proliferation treaty-compliant states. The policy also renounces development of any new nuclear weapons. Momentum of the new era slowed and hard realities resurfaced in 2011 and no new breakthroughs occurred. The multilateral nuclear arms control agenda is stymied. The the CTBT, which is, I'll tell you in a moment, a comprehensive nuclear test ban treaty, which bans all nuclear explosions in all environments for military or civilian purposes, adopted by the UN back in 1996, but still not in force, has not passed. It's supposed to go into effect 180 days after it's ratified by 44 nations, and I assume the big boys as well. The CTBT is no closer to ratification than when President Obama came into office. The FMCT negotiations remain stuck, and that's the Fissile Material Cutoff Treaty, which is a proposed international treaty to prohibit the further production of fissile material for nuclear weapons or other explosive devices. The treaty has not been negotiated, and its terms remain to be defined. According to a proposal by the U.S., fissile material includes high-enriched uranium and plutonium, except plutonium that is over 80% Pu-238. According to a proposal by Russia, fissile material will be limited to weapons-grade uranium. There's some little disputes here. On the 27th of some of the background, a verification mechanism disputes. U.S. opposed the inclusion of a verification mechanism. The grounds could not be effectively verified. In November 2004, the U.S. cast the sole vote in the U.N. General Assembly against a resolution calling for the negotiation of an effectively verifiable treaty. This was the Bush administration. And then in April of 2009, Barack Obama reversed the U.S. position on verification and proposed to negotiate a new treaty that verifiably ends the production of fissile materials. And however, Pakistan has repeatedly blocked this, despite severe pressure from major nuclear powers to end its defiance. And we aren't even going to talk about Israel and the Middle East here at this particular point. Anyway, so there's still a lot of nuclear weapons being batted about. And it's something we don't think about, or at least I certainly don't think about it very often. But, you know, we are like 10 minutes from death with submarines off the coast. All they need to do is fire a submarine, fire a missile from a submarine, and away we go, resulting in not just the depressing thing is not just your death and the deaths of everyone you know, but the deaths of the people that might carry on later with a likely nuclear winter showing up. That is to say, a drastic change of the environment that essentially exterminates humans, maybe mammals. But I understand cockroaches have a good survival capacity, although, again, my knowledge of this thing is coming from a couple of decades back. And so there have been some breakthroughs. I expect all you people to call in and tell me that things have drastically shifted and I'm just too much of an alarmist. This is not my normal subject. My normal subject has to do with what's going on with locally, with the police, homeless folks, politicians, neighbors who want to gentrify the area and run homeless people out of town, merchants who want to criminalize homeless people in public spaces or don't mind that happening, as long as it doesn't happen to their customers. And so I'm going to play some of the interviews I did recently on Tuesday. A number of us got together to gather some information on what's going on with these alleged raids on homeless camps. I mean, there was an announcement made several weeks ago by the police in the Sentinel that they were going to be not only raiding homeless camps in the next 4 to 6 weeks, but they also asked people to kind of be the snitch of the month, call in the police department and inform on a homeless camp near you. And that in order, of course, to protect the environment and save future merchants from being stabbed on the streets by mad homeless people, and generally clean up the town. Kind of a Take Back Santa Cruz wet dream come true. Take Back Santa Cruz is an organization that it's run by Annalisa and Dexter Cube, or I think it was co-founded by them, has successfully run candidates for some of the city commissions and is now running a candidate for city council explicitly. Pamela is her first name, and I don't, at the tip of my fingers have her last name, but I hopefully will in the days ahead. So on Tuesday afternoon, some of us got together to sort of invite homeless folks to come and give us their accounts of what's going on. And I picked up some of those accounts at the Red Church. Calvary Episcopal has a meal every Monday around 5 to 7 at the Red Church for all you hungry folks out there who still somehow can manage to belly up to a computer or a radio and hear this. And I also, there's also an opportunity to talk to folks there, so I do, and get accounts from folks. And I got some interviews there, which I'm going to play now, so you can hear what some people are saying about what's happening out there in the bushes, under the bridges, out in the parks, and just sometimes in plain sight and broad daylight in terms of how human beings are being treated by our local police department, Parks and Rec, and the authorities in Santa Cruz. If you want to call in and pass on your own account as to what you've heard, you can. The call-in numbers are 427-3772. 427-3772 and 469-3119, 469-3119. So do that, and we will hear from not just me and this tape, but also from you.
All right, let's take you here. We're here with a group of folks that's across from the Red Church at the Monday meal, and it's about 20 after 5. We're talking with
Lawrence McGregor.
Lawrence, you have a cast on your left arm. What's that all about?
I was sleeping on the levee. I got woken up by an officer of the law pulling me out of a bush, and they said I was resisting arrest. I was not. I was still asleep. Then I saw four billy clubs come out of people's hands and hitting me with it. I have four broken bones and two cracked ribs.
When did this happen?
Yesterday at 10 o'clock in the morning.
And where did this happen?
On the levee behind CBS.
And do you know the names and the officers who did this?
I got all the tickets.
And who were they?
One of them is Baker, Officer Baker.
And how many other officers were involved?
Four. I don't know them all.
Any comments made by the officers during this activity?
I don't know because I was asleep. I took some sleeping pills the doctor gave me because I have problems sleeping. And cops physically beat me down so hard, I woke up in the hospital.
And what did the doctor say was the diagnosis again? You say it was four broken bones?
I have four broken bones in my hand, on my left arm, and three cracked ribs in my left side.
And you also have some other medical conditions.
I am stage 4 cancer, and I'm a disabled fag.
And this all happened yesterday morning?
Yes, sir.
Where did you sleep last night?
I didn't. I woke up in the hospital.
So tonight, what are your plans?
I'm going to stay at the Red Church.
Have they offered you a place?
Yes.
And will you be coming tomorrow to the 2 o'clock constitutional session to hold the city accountable for the violation of human rights in Santa Cruz?
Yes, I am. If I have to be on one of the talkers, I will.
All right. Well, again, we've been talking with
Lawrence McGregor.
Anything you want to add, Lawrence?
Anytime anyone needs anyone to talk to Robert Norris. He's the right person to talk to.
For sure. Thank you. So we're here with a man playing a flute on the sidewalk, without a permit, I might add, shockingly. And we have a woman who was last seen lurking around Occupy. She's returned to town, and her name is?
Voice.
And Voice, what have you been doing, and what brings you back to our tight little burg?
I've been traveling across America for the last 6 months and went as far as Tennessee and West Virginia for the 40th annual Rainbow Gathering. I've been learning a lot, seeing a lot, and now I'm back in California. I just got back here yesterday.
And have you had any contact with your friends, the police?
Yeah, just last night they woke me up around midnight telling me you cannot sleep in your vehicle anywhere in Santa Cruz County.
Where were you parked when this happened?
Over there on 41st Avenue in Capitola.
So this actually wasn't the Santa Cruz police, it was the deputy?
It was the Santa Cruz police, not the sheriff.
So it wasn't the Capitola police, because it would be...
No, it was Santa Cruz.
And you know this because...
I saw them with my own eyes, and they wrote my friend a ticket for sleeping in a car.
And you were on 41st Avenue.
Yep, right there by the Little Caesars.
Wow, because that's out of their jurisdiction, and it's actually out of the jurisdiction of the city's sleeping ban law. Do you have a copy of that citation with you?
My friend does.
Is he around?
He's somewhere.
Better investigate this story. Clearly, the woman is lying, trying to defame our police department, our good officers, who would never make such an error, for God's sake. We have an associate here. What is your name, sir?
I'm Jason.
And where are you from?
I'm Southern California.
How long you been in town?
Not very long. Just came here to play music and catch up musicians.
Are you a flautist as well?
Am I what?
Are you a flautist or just one who flouts authority?
I guess I flout authority. I don't know.
What kind of music do you play?
Funky, bluesy, Spanishy jazz.
With what kind of instrument?
I play guitar. He plays didgeridoo and harmonica.
You're pointing to our flute player here?
Yeah, he plays it. Yeah.
So have you been doing that on Pacific Avenue?
I haven't yet, no, but I definitely would want to, though. Yeah. Support.
And will you be attending the constitutional chow down tomorrow at the San Lorenzo Park area?
I'm going to definitely try to make it, man. I feel very divine that this moment just happened, so I definitely want to try to do that, yeah.
Way cool. And what about you, flute man?
Hello.
Hello. And we're talking with...
My name is Adrian.
And Adrian, what big eyes you have.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For seeing, of course.
Indeed. And to be seen.
I guess so, yeah.
See and be seen. Santa Cruzan or from out of town?
From out of town.
Where from?
From all around, really. I just came from SoCal right now.
Any problems with the police?
Up here? I have not yet. I've heard many of stories. But, yeah, I mean, my own encounters with police in general, yeah, much problem.
But not here in Santa Cruz?
Not here in Santa Cruz.
Now, do these tales of terror frighten you?
Sadly, you know, yeah.
I don't know.
Just because, you know, it just, you see a cop down the street and just drills that fear right into you. And it's
so
just not a good feeling.
A little apprehension when you see the black and white coming your way?
Yeah, the thugs. They're stormtroopers.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's scary because, you know, they're not out, you know. I mean, I don't know. There's just different intentions going on. It's just not so entirely pure.
Now, you intend to be playing for donation here in Santa Cruz?
Sometime, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Well, I want a full report on that. Excuse us, folks.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'll be around. We'll be back.
And again, we've been talking with...
Adrian.
And we've also been talking with...
Jason.
And, of course, finally...
A voice.
Thank you, voice. Thank you, Jason. And thank you...
Voice.
Adrian.
Adrian. All right, we're talking to...
Todd.
Todd, here we are at the Calvary Episcopal Church, actually in front of it, and the sunshine, but has it been sunshiny for you? What's been happening?
Well, I'm just coming through some surgery, and I'm healing up, and I went over to the River Street shelter, and found out that it was infested with all kinds of bugs, lice, scabies, other type of body magnets.
No hugging for you, buddy, I gotta tell you right now.
Why, you want a hug?
No, thanks. Now, when did you learn this and how?
It was through staff, and I saw him cleaning, and I asked.
Right.
Yeah.
And they candidly told you, we got bugs.
They had bugs.
And are they able to eliminate the bugs through some sort of extermination process?
Well, I think the way bugs go is they jump to one person to the other, and you know, there's really no way to get... With a situation like that, you have that many people,
mm-hmm.
and when you have the creepy crawlies, they're going to jump to whoever.
You're making me itch here, Todd, I got to tell you.
No, I'm itching too.
Now, is this, are you talking about bugs at meals or bugs at the Pauley Loft?
The Pauley Loft.
Right. And were you a customer there? Were you a client there, I should say?
No. I was for 2 days, and I heard about that, and it made me itch.
But that could have been suggestibility. Do you actually have bugs, do you think?
No.
So you think it made you apprehensive?
I know people that have them.
And you think they got them at the Pauley Loft?
It's a fact.
Okay. And so where do you go now that you're no longer using the Pauley Loft?
Well, there's people like Santori, Ian, and Father Joel that are running this program, and it's an alternative to bugs.
So this is the Red Church's very small interfaith satellite shelter program? Which, yes. What, and how do people get into that program if they want?
Well, you have to come here on Monday night, and you have to qualify. And, you know, you have to, you know, they look for people of a certain stature and a certain quality of people. You know, we are not a jailhouse mentality. We are just people that need a place to sleep and look for work.
So how long have you been on this ISSP program?
I've done it for 4 weeks.
And how does it suit you, and what does it involve?
It involves...
You show up at what time?
We show up usually about 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. and then about 5, after they take a head count and whatnot, Ian usually shelters us to the next stop, next church.
Takes you in a vehicle to a church?
Yeah.
And do they, I guess you get a meal here. This only happens on Monday night, or how often does that happen?
4 nights a week, but it's not here. It's like a satellite program.
And is it different churches every night? Or?
Yeah.
And do they provide food or just shelter?
They provide food and shelter.
Spiritual counseling?
If you want it.
Sexual gratification?
Well, no. I don't think that's allowed in the church.
Probably not. Unless you're talking about a different kind of church, which might be my kind of church. But I'm glad to hear they're providing shelter. I'm glad to hear they're providing food. Any other thoughts about this?
I think they're doing an awesome job, and it'd be great if more churches would jump on.
How many churches are involved now?
I think we have 4.
And how many people get served each night?
For sleeping?
Yeah.
About 12.
That's a small number. How many people want to be served each night that you know of?
Well, it has to be a certain type and a quality.
But how many people actually need to be served each night? But don't.
Oh, there's more than that. I'd say at least 75.
Right. Even though there is this Pauli Loft program, and there's a, you know, presumably a Rebelly Family Shelter program, and the Paige Smith Community House program.
Okay. The problem with that is, and I'll tell you, they run their program like a jail. They have a lot of people that go in there with the jailhouse mentality, so they have to run it like a jail. The food tastes like jail. They run it like a jail.
And what does that mean when you say they run it like a jail? Be more specific if you can.
They're very strict.
And
a timeline. You have to be out of the loft at this time. You have to shower at this time. You have to eat at this time. You know, you have to take a crap at this time. You know, and there's no human dignity at all.
This is often a complaint of other shelters in other cities, too, I've heard. What about arbitrary exclusions? Have you heard of people being kicked out without good reason?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
How frequently does that happen?
It happens every day.
Did it happen one of the 2 days when you stayed there?
I go down there every day to take a shower and whatnot and get clean.
And you get treated like you're in a jail, or do you actually are able to take a shower at some comfort?
It depends on who's working and whatnot. Each staff person is different. But, you know, they have a job to do, and I understand they have to run it a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and it's sad. It shouldn't be, you know, people have to act accordingly, and if you can't be humane, then, you know what, that's going to happen. You're going to be treated like that.
Well, do you feel that how they treat people is justified by other people, by their need to treat people that way, or do you think it's an unnecessary harshness?
It's unnecessary, and they should be asked to leave. If they can't ask to act like a human being.
So are you criticizing the clients or the way the system is run, or both?
I'm talking about both.
I know.
It's not the whole staff's fault. It's not all their fault. You know, staff, you know, they're, you know, like I said, is a jailhouse mentality, and they'll try to get away with anything.
They being the staff or the client?
Clients.
Okay. So what kinds of things are you talking about?
drug dealing, alcoholism, fights, prostitution, you name it.
Well, those are three things I can understand. I probably don't kill people there.
No, it's not true. There's been murders that have started there and ended up in other places.
Really?
But the fights have started there.
That you know of personally?
Yes.
I'll have to talk to the DA about this.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about it. You know, I have two next-door neighbors that died next to me when I was living through a program run by the Loft, and they did nothing about it, and they died in their house, and they left them there for 3-4 days before they opened the door, and I said something was wrong.
When did these deaths occur?
Last year.
Who were the dead people?
One was Jamie. The other was Rosalie. They were my next-door neighbors.
And where was this?
This was at Nueva Sol on Barson Street, 111.
Well, we'll be talking more about this if you bring it up again when we next...
This is huge. This is huge. No one talked about it. They tried to hide it.
Did you report it to authorities?
No, I wanted to live there. I don't live there anymore. I didn't want any trouble. I didn't want to be kicked out.
Do you mind if I play this on the air?
Would you please?
Will do. And we've been talking with?
Todd Kent.
Thanks, Todd.
Yeah.
And first I'd heard of these deaths at Barson Street, if that account is accurate. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, and the stream for Free Radio can be reached by going to the website TuneIn and putting in the letters FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you'll get the rather lengthy Free Radio stream website. You can also go to our website at freakradio.org. You won't get our stream, but you will get information and schedules and ways of getting some of the archives of some of the different shows. And you can also get applications if you want to actually join Free Radio, ways to donate money, equipment, things of that sort, which we can use, as I always say, and have been directed to say by the little note here on the board. So do that. Freakradio.org is the website to go to. We're always looking for new people. I keep seeing them. New people coming in and out, new broadcasters. Interested? Just fill out an application. The only thing you have to do is you have to pay money to actually help pay for the rent of this place here, this studio. And then we struggle to get the public to kick down money at the various benefits we give and so forth. So you can hear me and others talking at you, and you can even hear yourself occasionally if you choose to call in. Call-in numbers here are 831-427-3772, 427-3772, if you want to get in touch and call in. Regarding what the last speaker was talking about, Pauli Loft, and this Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, really kind of a tiny ISSP program, Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, that's been sort of restarted at the Calvary Episcopal Church and the number of other churches. It failed before. Well, actually, they got about 75 people a night that they were serving, but it was very expensive because they had to put a lot of money into gas, where people would kind of go to the homeless lack of services center at 115 Coral Street, line up for a van, or be taken off to a place that was some miles away at a church, and it seemed much more cost effective to have one shelter in a place, and indeed, that was the kind of the rationale for the Pauli Loft, and also for Doug Loisel's attempt to expand the homeless shelter area to an adjacent warehouse building, which was, I don't know whether it was nixed by the property owner or nixed by the city authorities or nixed by the city manager. Not sure who nixed it, but he did mention it briefly in the interview he had with us a couple weeks ago. That's Doug Loisel. One of the few good directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, who I didn't agree with on everything, but, you know, he opened the bathrooms 24 hours a day, reopened the shelter, which is now closed during the day unless you are doing specific business. He had no such thing as the so-called no-impact zones, which are areas around the shelter where you're not allowed to loiter. So not only can't you loiter downtown, although there's no such thing as a constitutional no loitering law. Such laws are unconstitutional. But the shelter claims that they have made some deal with the city to pressure clients not to hang around. Although, ironically, this homeless lack of services center originally formed as a thing called the Free Meal back in 1989, 1990. Actually, it formed as a thing called Calamity's Cupboard that became a Free Meal, and that became the Homeless Community Resource Center, and then became the current Homeless Services Center, which I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center, given the fact that they provide only a pittance of shelter, and they also provide this sort of jailhouse mentality, which, as you hear from at least one homeless individual, tends to deny dignity to people. Although there are those who will say that they really got good work from the Homeless Lack of Services Center, there are people who disagree with that. I tend to be the critical voice because I think they need to address issues they aren't addressing. And indeed, these issues came up on a program recently that where Don Lane debated John Colby, who was, he's been on our show. Actually, I don't think he was on our show. I think his clients were on our show. Mia and Andrea were on our show. Disabled individuals who themselves were either improperly thrown out of the Homeless Lack of Services Center for organizing there and for trying to assert their own rights and assert protect other disabled people. And there's a program that was done where Don Lane, who's both the mayor of Santa Cruz and on the board of directors for a long time of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, defended the Homeless Lack of Services Center and sort of schmoozed over any problems that were there and declared it was a matter of resources. And he finally, he had to be repeatedly coaxed, and I wouldn't use the word bullied, though others would, but pressed into coming on the air to talk about issues. And he really, unfortunately, the person who ran the show didn't really hold, I think, Lane's feet to the fire the way she should have. Kind of hard to do, though, if you're not really deeply aware of the issues. But the issues had to do with really specific, not just specific abuses against disabled people, but a lack of protection for people who either get abused there, get unfairly evicted, get badly treated, and then have no way to challenge that and change it and get that whole situation remedied, other than if they happen to be able to catch the ear of a powerful person like Don Lane. And it is true that Steve Lazow, who is a disabled guy in a wheelchair, like he's got cancer or some serious illness, and when he was bathed by Mia in the shower because other staff refused to help him, they threw them both out because they were violating a rule that said you can't shower someone of the opposite sex. There's some sort of, I guess it's a gay delight out there. Obviously not. It's not about sex at all. But this sort of prudish and more authoritarian attitude, and more important than that, just a basic lack of sensitivity to the needs of disabled people, really pissed off John Colby, who's been gathering information. Now he has 9 homeless disabled people who he's trying to advocate for. A lot of trouble getting them to acknowledge he was their advocate. A lot of trouble getting their records. A lot of trouble getting any responses. Lane's response to all this was to denounce me for putting up Colby's claims on Indie Bay and publishing the correspondence that was not confidential or private. Correspondence with the mayor is not private. In fact, it shouldn't be private. It's a public issue. But, you know, Lane did eventually come on the air, but that show is coming up to air in early August, and I actually have I was there in the studio, and I was the talk show host who did that was gracious enough to give me a copy, but she also didn't want the audio of the show to be played until after the video is played on community TV, which hopefully, that's going to be in a couple of weeks. And it bothers me because it's going to be kind of it's several weeks when the issue is left out in the cold, and perhaps along with some of the homeless disabled people that are getting shafted out there. Although it's true, once these things get exposed, the city, at least some of the officials, do scramble to make it look like everything's fine. It's always been fine. There's never been a problem. If there is, it's quickly fixed, that sort of thing, which you can expect from politicians of all stripes, whether they're, you know, wearing a little badges that say homeless helpers or whatever they are. So my point that I was making earlier, though, was that the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is now being set up again by Calvary Episcopal, while a noble effort in a certain sense, is another charity drop in the bucket. We're talking, you know, a couple, maybe 100 people at most, if they actually can get a bunch of churches involved. I mean, there are dozens of churches in the Santa Cruz. I think there are over 100, maybe even 200 churches in the Santa Cruz County. But attempts to get them organized, I think that they got 10 or 20 churches involved at the maximum when the old ISSP program was active, which kind of predated the Pauley Loft. And they found, as I said, that was too expensive because of gas and so forth. But it was much more human and involved, you know, a church's congregation, involved providing meals. And people could actually sometimes go directly to the church, not have to go through some sort of elaborate vehicular waiting line deal. But it only served a fraction of the homeless need. And that, combined with the sleeping ban that makes it criminal for a homeless person to sleep at night and also criminal to have a blanket to protect them after 11 o'clock at night and so-called layout bedding, and makes it illegal to set up a campsite with the intention to remain overnight any time of the day or night, anywhere in Santa Cruz. Can't even sleep in your own car, legally parked. You can't even park your car in many streets as an attempt to drive away people who are potential campers, because people will sleep in their vehicles because they have to. They have no housing. For many people, affordable housing is a vehicle, as the truism goes. It's become sort of a trite thing to say, but it's true. Affordable housing for many is a vehicle. And some people are, I know one guy is scrambling for a vehicle. He spends part of his time helping with the political campaign of one of the political city council candidates, and the other rest of the time he's looking for a place to sleep. So all this is both depressing and tedious to those who have to constantly hear about it, as all you loyal listeners do. But I'm not sure if you're a half dozen or a dozen now, but appreciate the listeners. And again, if you have any comments or thoughts, you can call in 427-3772. Particularly interested in observations about whether there's been a change in how police and Parks and Rec Rangers and other authorities are treating homeless people. It's definitely, the police department itself has claimed that's the case, in a way kind of obviating the need for our homeless meal on Tuesday. You're going to hear me talking about this sort of Constitution, Bill of Rights, creating gathering. Really, that was simply, I was trying to bring people's attention to the fact that Rhode Island has passed a homeless Bill of Rights. The legislature, the actual non-homeless legislature, composed of people who are probably much richer than your average worker in the Rhode Island community, they passed a Bill of Rights asserting that homeless people should have the right to be in public spaces, the right to get housing without discrimination, not be discriminated, in other words, because of their status of being homeless. And the idea was to see what were the concerns of homeless people here in Santa Cruz around these issues. And also, I know, was there a crackdown that police had said was coming? And then we learned, actually, a few days ago, even before this meeting on Tuesday, fortified with soup from India Joe Schultz. Thank you, Joseph. Was happening. The crackdown was happening. They're not only issuing citations and arresting people. I think this is going to go around somewhere around 100 citations and half that many arrests. but also they're planning to start charging people who don't come to court to deal with these absurd citations and treat them as misdemeanors, which means you can get up to 6 months in jail or a $1,000 fine and or a $1,000 fine for doing that. In laws passed by Don Lane and his Santa Cruz City Council, Hillary Bryant and Ryan Coonerty and all those fun folks who are on the council. Hillary Bryant is vice mayor, likely to be the next mayor. These are the people that your city elected, or what should we say, given the dismal choices they presented that, you know, got voted in with the power of money and the kind of stuff that usually passes for a democracy, but it's actually a plutocracy in our city, in our country, in our world, pretty much.
Back in 1942, I was the member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us, ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging. We'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, the men won't be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination. Follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, all at once the moon clouded over and we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than where he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy a mile from where we'd gone. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. Now, I'm not gonna plant any moral. I'll leave that up to you. But while we still got time for working, we've all got a work to do. 'Cause every time I read the paper, that old feeling comes on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, and the big fool says, push on.
And directly from the big muddy, we have the big mud guy himself, Steve Plage. Hey, Steve.
How are all my good friends at Free Radio tonight?
So, Steve, you're attending a meeting of the Progressive, but we don't endorse the Santa Cruz 11 Coalition tonight, right?
Actually, that meeting was kind of put aside, at least for me. We kind of agreed that as an active candidate, they didn't want to give me any advantage over any other candidates who weren't attending, so I will not be attending that meeting.
Whoa, so your candidacy is actually interfering with your activism, eh, Steve Plage?
Well, I can still be as activist as I want to be. It gives me more time to concentrate on the Santa Cruz 11.
Yes. Now, you did attend a Wednesday, unusual Wednesday night meeting of the American Lack of Civil Liberties in Santa Cruz Union meeting, did you not, last night?
I did, indeed.
And what transpired there? I know that you were, of course, bringing up issue after issue, the sleeping ban, the sitting ban, the recent crackdown on the homeless. You naturally brought up all these issues, right, Steve?
Well, those issues, as you know, were put over until the next meeting, where we will be talking about curfews and whatnot. But we just had our general meeting talking about issues, basically planning sessions for various four that we're going to have in our annual meeting. But then we had our communication from your good friend and mine, Bob LaMonica.
So, Dad, this oral communication, that's a sort of a process where non-ACLU members get, what, 3 minutes or 5 minutes, 15 minutes? How long do they get to talk?
Well, Bob is an ACLU member, so he is really accorded, I guess, a little bit more deference. He was the only speaker, so I think Bob got 6 or 8 minutes, perhaps. You know, he said what he intended to say, and it was received, and, you know, it was oral communication as it should be.
Now, there's been a lot of criticism of ACLU, although it recently, of course, has, under your prompting, has supported at least a serious consideration of the overcharging of the Santa Cruz 11, not an urging that all the charges be dropped and that Bob Lee be sent to Mexico for a long vacation, which I think is a much better idea.
Yeah. True enough, as you know, the ACLU was the first organization in town to issue a statement of support for the Santa Cruz 11, and we preceded the Occupy Resolution support, I know, because I wrote both of them.
And indeed, that was primarily because of your pressure and also because of the fact that I believe Board of Directors, Shadow Director Mike Rotkin, I should say a strong force on the board of the ACLU, was a defender of and teacher of Bradley Allen, one of the Santa Cruz 11, and actually testified in his behalf at court. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. Matter of fact, I guess they have some association going back. But when we had proposed to send a letter to Northern California ACLU, on the question of submitting an amicus brief in support of Bradley and Alex on the freedom of speech issues, everyone on the board was unanimous in support of that. And as you know, that brief was filed with the court, and the court did take note of it. And now we're hoping, also through any efforts that I can make, to contact NorCal and see if they'll submit a brief on your behalf, as well as Becky's and Garbillo's, the remaining defendants, on the issue of selective prosecution. So that's the next step in the process.
And has that passed muster with the ACLU board, or are you still batting
that
one
around? No, that's already been approved, and I've been given the go-ahead to contact Michael Richter, who was the fellow staff attorney who wrote the original amicus brief in Bradley and Alex's case.
Now, I know you did yourself. You've also been talking about the Santa Cruz 11 and the attacks on the Occupy movement, such as it was, and maybe even in some kind of mythical sense remains, still kind of floats around and has its meetings every Sunday at 2 o'clock at the post office.
And Wednesday evenings at the courthouse desk.
So I've heard, though I understand having a little difficulty getting quorum down there.
Yeah.
But you've been able to, you know, raise these issues. I guess there is a hearing coming up tomorrow for two of the Santa Cruz 11, Cameron Lorando and Angel Alcantara, Franklin Alcantara as he's known more formally, in two different courts. Previously, the judge who'd been hearing these cases has had a batting average of 100 in shooting down each case that's come into his court for a preliminary hearing, or at least for a 995 dismissal motion after a preliminary hearing when the district attorney's Catwoman Rebecca Young attempted to refile charges. Every single case that came before Burdick has been dismissed. So now suddenly these cases are going to other courts. What's the significance of this?
Well, the significance is Rebecca Young, I would suspect, thinks that she'll get a better hearing from other judges other than Judge Burdick. That's the only thing I can think, because I have always thought that these cases will be difficult to prove as a matter of law, and as we've all seen, the deputy district attorney has really done a poor job of presenting her case to the court. So, frankly, I don't know whether it's going to make a difference if she's in a different courtroom, if she doesn't make a better presentation of the facts.
Now, what and for those who don't know, what's the Santa Cruz 11 situation? What are these cases? I mean, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. We have a bunch of vandals and criminals who broke into a bank. Isn't that what happened? Something like that?
Well, it was an autonomous action from some folks who were members of Occupy and other folks who were just local activists who decided to take over the Post Commercial Building. As you know, that's the 75 River Street.
Slow down a bit, Steve. You're going a little fast for me. I'm sorry. I know you got business you got to do. Or do you? Do you have a little time now? What's your schedule like?
Well, just a few moments.
Okay. Give it to us a little more slowly. You speak very rapidly, and I want to make sure that every word is gold, as we know. Right?
Yeah. Well, their intention was to repurpose vacant spaces for the use of the community, the use of the community for meeting space, use of the community for awareness-raising workshops, and also, this was during the winter months in November going on to December, possibly sheltering our part of our homeless population. So that was the intent of the folks who did the action at 75 River.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I was giving the Yahoo Know Nothing sort of the alarmist view of what happened. Nobody broke into the bank. The bank was open when a protest arrived there. Some people apparently somehow got the key to get into the bank, and everyone they were there for.
My understanding was that someone had procured the key from the lockbox, because, as you know, it's customary if you're renting any kind of a building or a house or anything like that. There's usually, for whoever's listing, has a listing for realtor, there's a lockbox, and so they just leave the key there, and they have a key for the lockbox, and so when they go, they don't have to carry keys to every building if they're listing around with them. That's the idea behind it.
Right, and of course, then this is a building vacant for 3.5 years, leased by one of the largest predatory lenders in the country, Wells Fargo, which has a bank across the street. And of course, it's one of four banks, vacant bank buildings around the city within a radius of 7 or 8 blocks from that very spot at 75 River. And this happened. This is an action that happened, you know, over a period of 3 or 4 days. Police did nothing to evict the people in terms of any arrests. There was one attempt to remove people with a barrage of police who came, you know, with, you know, shields up and batons drawn, and the Grenadier squad with the tear gas that they didn't use. And I think they wisely backed off and negotiated, and people eventually left. And then 2 months later, suddenly the deputies are handcuffing and arresting people at their homes, charging $5,000 bail, and then dragging them through months and months and months of trial, pre-trial, actually. We haven't even reached trial.
Exactly, you know, what Bob LaMonica was speaking to last night at the ACLU meeting. This is an abuse of power. And this is the very thing that we should all be challenging in every way that we can. As Santa Cruz 11 and their supporters are doing it, you know, in support groups and raising money and raising awareness. ACLU, to the extent that it has been supportive of the Santa Cruz 11, because this is an abuse of power. It's an abuse of power by the district attorney. It's an abuse of power by local law enforcement. And, you know, the community really should be outraged by this.
What will we see tomorrow at 9 o'clock in Department 3, Paul Maragonda's court, and Department 7, Judge Ariadne Simon's court, where I guess two of these defendants will be separately appearing for a so-called readiness hearing for their preliminary hearing? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's a pro forma hearing, and they'll be represented by their respective public defenders. And if there is no objection to proceeding to their preliminary examination, then they'll say, you know, are you ready to go? And if they say they are, then they'll be having the preliminary hearings, I guess, in the separate courts on Monday.
Now, I understand that there's a rumor in the air that the defense counsel wants to postpone this. There are five preliminary hearings for other Santa Cruz 11 defendants. There are actually only seven of them, but we do call them the Santa Cruz 11, call ourselves the Santa Cruz 11. I'm one of them. That are going on August 20th. Have you heard anything about that?
You know, I haven't. I do know that your prelim and that of Becky and Gabrielle and Brent and Desiree are all set on the same day, which is August 20th, and I think you're still before Judge Burdick. So the curiosity to me is why they are in Judge Maragonda's court and Judge Simon's court, and maybe their attorneys will raise some objection to that. I don't know, having not talked to either one of them, so I really don't have any information about that.
Yeah, my understanding is that these are two defendants who Judge Burdick threw out all charges for, saying there was insufficient evidence to even take the case to a jury, at which point Rebecca Young, the DA, then refiled charges. And I think, I don't know, I mean, it might have been the case that she refiled the charges and they were refiled in Burdick's court, and then she then disqualified Burdick. And they went to two different courts. Did that happen, do you know, or not?
You know, that I don't know, because most of the focus has been on the five of you and your hearing before Judge Burdick recently, where Rebecca Young's motion to disqualify Judge Burdick was denied. And so that's why you're all still in front of Judge Burdick on the 20th. Frankly, I don't know what's happened with Angel and Cameron
and their attorneys and why they are in before Judge Maragondin and Judge Simons. Judge Maragondin, my understanding was only hearing civil matters, so I don't really know why it would be before Judge Maragondin at all.
Now, will you be there to keep an eye on these proceedings tomorrow at 9 o'clock?
Maybe. It depends on my schedule and my election calendar and what's happened. I mean, if I'm not there, then my trusty associates, yourself, and the rest of the Santa Cruz 11, I'm sure, will be appearing and supporting Cameron Angel. But we'll just have to see what happens. I really don't have any information about their cases because, frankly, they really haven't maintained as much contact, with us as we would like and give us an opportunity to support them. So, you and Becky and Gabriella and Brandon and Desiree have made yourselves available to the Santa Cruz 11 support group to do some benefits and some awareness-raising stuff and just be around. We've been happy to support Santa Cruz 11 because we believe it's the right thing to do. But, if Cameron and Angel aren't around for us to be able to help them out, then it's hard to kind of know what's going on and follow the progress of their cases.
So, there's also a case coming up on Tuesday, Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, an attorney and an activist who were with Peace Camp 2010 a year and a half ago, a protest in favor of ending the sleeping ban and allowing homeless people to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere legally. They were sentenced to 6 months in jail, served 2 weeks, appealed that sentence finally, and now those appeals have been turned down, and I guess they're going back to Judge Gallagher's Department 2. That's happening on Tuesday at the same time as you have some kind of an event going on where you are fighting for the right of Occupy Santa Cruz activists and homeless folks to be able to use San Lorenzo Park as an area to protest and I guess also to camp. Is that accurate?
Sure. Well, a traditional public forum, and you can define that kind of any way you want. I'll be in front of Judge Volkman, the city, in their case, the people of City of Santa Cruz versus Steve Plage, moved to enter a default in the case, and then I filed a motion to set aside that default, which the city is not opposing, but they are filing a motion to dismiss because they feel like since the camp is no longer there, then the issue of public nuisance is not there. And I feel otherwise. I think that, I've been accused of creating and actively being involved in creating a public nuisance. And I think that, I deserve my day in court on that, but we'll have to see what happens on Tuesday. That's just a procedural thing. It'll either happen or it won't. And I'm not really too concerned about one way or another. I am concerned about Ed, however, because Ed and Gary are faced with a very real prospect because their appeal right now is exhausted. And Ed is going to file a writ of habeas corpus with the California Supreme Court. But in the interim, that might not stay their jail sentence. So they'll see on Tuesday whether or not they'll be returned to custody. So that's more concern to me, I think, than my shenanigans in front of Judge Volkman.
I think, both are of interest to those of us who are concerned with restoring rights for poor people in Santa Cruz. What time is your case happening?
It's 9 o'clock. Because I think if I have to look at paperwork, I think it's maybe 8:15 or 8:30. I'll be there bright and early, so as not to miss it. But I think those hearings are normally at 8:30. Again, I have to look at my paperwork to be sure. But
and what about Ed's case?
I'm hearing 9 o'clock, and I'm not really sure. You probably should talk to Ed to kind of confirm that. But as I say, that's a real concern to everybody because, Ed and Gary face a very real prospect of going back to jail for a minimum of 3 months, I think. Even with time off for good behavior, they're originally sentenced to the 6 months, and then in county jail you get 2 days for one. That's the calculation. So for every 2 days you serve, you get 1 day good time. So basically it cuts your sentence down by a third. So they would have had to serve 4 months, and having served 10 days or 2 weeks, so they've got, the remainder of that. And so that's of concern to everybody. We're hoping that Judge Gallagher will agree to stay the imposition of that sentence while Ed pursues his writ of habeas corpus to the California Supreme Court, but I'm not certain the judge is duty-bound or obligated under the law to do that.
Yeah, the judge makes a I must say it kind of almost a fetish of what coming down from the bench and greeting the public as they come to his courtroom and telling them that we're all citizens here. I may be wearing a robe, but I'm one of you, and you should feel free to speak your mind and so forth. What's your sense of that? Is that a bunch of horseshit or what, Steve? Is that something you think that has some real substance in Judge Gallagher's court?
Well, I don't know what to think of that. The judge's role is not one that involves public relations. You know, he's there, you know, to dispassionately dispense justice. You know, as he sees it, or she sees it. And you know, I don't think that expressions of a community, you know, conviviality really have much place in courtrooms. But, you know, every judge has their style, and most judges have the discretion to determine their own decorum and protocols in their own court. So it's pretty much as they would like to have it done.
You've also been working on the DSAL, the fight to stop the multi-million dollar, some say, boondoggle for this desal plant, which Mayor Don Lane and other council members have been supporting. I guess Cynthia Matthews, a new person running for city council, against you and the other council candidates running, supports. And you finally got this on the ballot. And there's going to be some sort of shindig coming up for all the salty desal support opponents?
Yeah, there's a garden party celebration and kind of a kickoff party for the fundraising to get the money it'll take to support the ballot measure at 3 o'clock, 119 Linden Avenue. It's up near Water and Branch of 40, so we'll all be gathering there. And, you know, it'd be a good time to kind of check in with everybody and see if everybody's kind of gathered their momentum and their collective breaths and is ready to go forward with this one thing, to put it on the ballot, which was, you know, a major undertaking and a great victory, but it's another thing to go ahead and support that measure when it gets onto the ballot, so the people will have a guaranteed right to vote on the desal plant when it gets ready to put the shovel in the ground.
What day is this going to be?
It's Sunday.
Okay. That's going to be Sunday at 3 o'clock at 119 Linden Street, you say. Plus, I guess there's a big festivity coming up, donde se puede hablar mucho español, in downtown Santa Cruz, the
Festival del Nopal, that's right, Sunday.
I don't think I've ever had Nopal. That's edible cactus, no?
That's exactly right. It's evidently a staple in Mexican cooking and one of their culinary treats, so I'm told. And last year we drew like several thousand people down here. They have it in the lot next to the library, of course, all in the front of the street there. They closed the street off. And it's a great community building event, so we've been working hard on that. And I will actually be walking, not running, in the wharf-to-wharf race wearing a cactus costume.
Wearing a what?
A cactus costume.
A cactus, kind of a prickly sort of thing?
Actually, it's just kind of a green something with, why won't we have any pricklies on it? I'm not a very pricklish person. I'm, you know.
Some
you
people
can't
think
hug
you're it's more
a
of
cactus
a...
if it has, you know, if it has prickles on it. So
I won't make the pun here that I was tempted to make.
Anyway, we've been working hard on that, and then we're looking forward to, you know, getting that going and having people come out and enjoy that. And I'll be there from early. We have to get there at 6 on Sunday morning, but then I'll be going up to the party and celebration on Linden for at least an hour and a half or so. My campaign manager, Leslie Dinkin, who oftentimes facilitates your HUNT meeting, will be up there in advance of my appearance, passing out some campaign literature and talking to some folks. So, be a good day.
And this is going to be at the Nopal Festival, or?
It's the festival, third annual festival del Nopal.
And that's going to be downtown on Pacific Avenue on Saturday from 10?
Sunday from 10 to 6, and it's right in the parking lot, right next to the public library, and in the street right in front of it.
I got you. And that's so people can kind of start there and then wander over to the D-Cell and tipple.
There you go.
All right. Well, anything else coming up that we should be aware of this summer? I know that you have a variety of council contenders that have been, some of them have been profiled in the Santa Cruz Urinal, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, as they call themselves.
And unfortunately, some of them were complaining about the lack of profile in the Santa Cruz Sentinel and were severely lambasted by a letter to the editor today.
Now, that was Micah Posner you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
And you, on the other hand, have gotten your profile, but you, the main thing that you do was ignored, the fact that you are a suicide prevention worker and also a needle exchange activist, yeah?
Yeah, well, you know, people will find out about that. All they have to do is go to our website, steveforsantacruz.org, and I'll be talking about that, among other things, when I'm out in the community, talking to people in their homes. So plenty of time for that.
Steveforsantacruz.org.
Do your lights turn off automatically?
Sorry?
I'm doing another good deed. I'm down here downtown doing good deeds.
You
some lady pulled up in front of the Civic here, and she left her lights on.
Telling
her about seeing there. I just another good deed, another volunteer opportunity.
Well, let me ask you, Steve, and again, I encourage you to slow down for us old timers here. you have been a person who works at the Calvary Episcopal Church as well, stuffing bagels into the mouths of unwitting poor homeless people, and also being available as a resource for the homeless legal assistance project. Have you been noticing an uptick in the number of citations and arrests you've heard about that the police have been reporting and that the city council has been suggesting they're supporting? Any report on that?
Actually, I have seen an increase in the last week or two. Normally, I wouldn't see more than a ticket or two a week, but I've gotten several from folks who have come up to me at the dinner at Calvary Episcopal and said, I got this campaign ticket and wanted to talk about it. So that does, to me, reflect an increased enforcement of the camping ban.
And what's your reaction to that situation? What kind of strategies do you suggest to those who bring you these citations?
Well, the strategy is, you know, those tickets aren't going to go over to the court for 2 months. That's the normal lag period. And, you know, then what they should do if they would, I think, they can go over and set a court date and maybe go down in front of the old friend, Commissioner Jim Baskett, and see if they can get a hearing. But, yeah, I don't know. A lot of homeless folks just don't have the, you know, they're trying to survive day to day, and so, you know, they want to troop over to the courthouse and then go to a court hearing just because they wanted to find a place to sleep. So it's troubling. It's kind of a sea change that I'm more concerned about because, you know, my understanding with when Kevin Vogel, who is the chief now for, I guess, a year or so, but I had had conversations with him when he first became chief about the enforcement of camping ban. He told me that his policy was going to be that the issuance of camping ban tickets was complaint-driven. So unless somebody was complaining, unless there was some outcry and people sleeping in your backyard, you know, they weren't going to be giving out tickets. Now, I think maybe that's changed because there's been so much community outcry about the murder of Shannon Collins and that tragedy, and that has tarred the entire homeless community. So that may be what, certainly that was what prompted council members Bryant, Robinson, and Coonerty to propose this draconian initiative having to do with registration and increased police presence at Homeless Services Center and suggesting that the sheriff ship homeless folks who completed whatever short sentences they have at the county jail out of the county, which, of course, is completely unconstitutional. But it may be, and it still may be, a reaction to what the community is feeling. It's hard to gauge, but there does seem to be an awful lot of backlash against the homeless folks, whereas there have not been, you know, to the extent we see now previously.
You know, there was a meeting of the Santa Cruz Public, the Santa Cruz City Council's Public Safety Committee meeting a few days ago. I didn't get to it, but I noticed an agenda posted outside the City Hall which mentioned a series of repressive measures that they're considering. I'm going to ask you to look that over and maybe comment on it on Sunday when I come back to do a longer version of the show at 9:30 in the morning.
Okay, perhaps I can do that.
And maybe you can use your good office to talk to the much-beloved Dennett Shoemaker, Parks and Rec Department Director, who I recently sent a Public Records Act request to find out exactly what she orders her labor-ready crews to do with homeless property. Does it get stored? Does it get buried? Does it get thrown out to sea? What happens to a homeless backpack's survival gear, valuables, medicines, and so forth? You have any idea what they do with that stuff, Steve?
No, I don't know. This is really, as I say, such a
drastic policy change from what we had seen. I mean, what we had seen previously certainly wasn't good, but this is truly awful and horrific, I think. And I don't really know what's going on with that.
Hmm. Well, I know that I did do some interviews at the same time you were handing out bagels and also advising people with the Homeless Legal Assistance Project, which you also do on Fridays out at the Homeless Community Homeless Lack of Services Center. I can never get the name right.
I'll be up there tomorrow. As I usually am on Fridays briefly see if there's anybody that needs any assistance. So, yeah, we just have to do what we can.
What time will you be out there for those who want to know? What time will you be out there?
The homeless folks who are sleeping out at night, at least are going to be aware that there's, a new sheriff in town, a new policy that seems to be imposed. So, I don't know whether that's, at least some knowledge is a better defense than none. But,
What time, Steve, will you be out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center?
I should be out there probably between 10 and 11:30 or something.
And you're the tall guy with the silver hair and the balmy
smile. Sure, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, listen, it sounds like you're getting a little impatient with this lengthy interview.
Always a pleasure, but I got to get going and do some stuff. So.
All right. Well, you're going to be around later, or are you out of here?
I'll probably be around at some point this evening. I'm staying around town for a while.
I may be at Joe's afterward around 8 or 8:15 if you show up.
Okay. Maybe I'll see you then.
Could be. Thank you. And, Steve, for your number, is it appropriate to give it out again to people that
sure.
want to contact you?
Yeah. 466-6078.
466-6078 to talk to Steve Plaich. And also, you are running for the shitty council, are you not?
That's right, every day.
And your website, for those who want to know, your website is, I'm sorry, Steve, your website is
steveforsantacruz.org.
steveforsantacruz.org. Cool. Thank you
all
very
right,
much, as usual.
Yeah, take care.
All right, man. Bye-bye. And that's Steve Plaich, rhymes with H, P-L-E-I-C-H, Steve Plaich. I haven't endorsed anybody for city council. I don't approve of people running for city council unless they actually have enough money to do it and they have a large bunch of people who are willing to act as an alternative to the existing staff who are the real people who run the city, not the city council. The city manager and the staff run the city. And the city council can only kind of bleat and baa and beg and that sort of thing unless they have a very significantly strong constituency behind them or they are falling in line with the city attorney, the police chief, and the staff, which is what they usually do. And that being the case, it's not really... The election is a deceptive fantasy that has little to do with any kind of meaningful change, just as the national election means absolutely nothing in terms of changes in bank policy, the foreign murder policy, and the shredding of the Constitution that's going on. And the militarization of the country, which doesn't matter whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans. They are both doing it. And it's the community of people that has to stop it. And that's why the Occupy movement was so valuable, because it raised that hope. And that hope is still there, because the community is still there. We are still here. Let's hear a little music, and who knows, your flood of phone calls soon to come in at 427-3772. You're welcome to chat with me, and I will chat back at you. And in the meantime, you'll just have to listen to a little of this.
Happen to see the news tonight? All over the world, everybody marching, carrying signs. All over the world, everybody walking hand in hand. All over the world, through the streets of Europe and Japan. All over the world, all over the world, all over the world. All over the world, ladies and gentlemen, people are taking the cure, and wherever you go, it's just the same. Just take the next step, whatever it is for you.
whether it's writing a letter or going over a fence, whether it's talking to the Russians or talking to your own friends. Just take that next step and don't worry about the one after, because there's people marching in front of you and there's people marching behind. And any step you're not taking, somebody else is. Because in every city, in every land, all over the world, we're taking the future into our own hands. All over the world, from Australia to Iceland, wherever you go. All over the world, we're walking together, not walking alone. All over the world, all over the world, all over the world. And all over the world, they're singing about it too. Here's a song from Australia about New Zealand, how they said no, they weren't going to take in American nuclear warships, unlike some countries I might name. Oh, the kiwi is a pretty bird, she's placid, sweet, and charming. An eagle is a predator with manners most alarming. She proudly flies across the skies, he looks so fine and graceful. But the kiwi knows looks can lie, and his habits are distasteful. Hey, New Zealand, who would have thought it could be you? But if kiwis can stand up to eagles, why not the kangaroo? Hey, New Zealand, who would have thought it would be you? But if kiwis can stand up to eagles, why not the beaver too? I lived all my life in this country. I know every flower and tree. I expect to live here till I'm 90. Hey, it's the nukes that must go and not me. Now, that was the theme song of the Clamshell Alliance. 1,500 people who went over the fence and stopped a nuclear power site back in Seabrook, New Hampshire. And all the clams, as they called themselves, they'd repeat the last lines of the verse as the chorus. Now you can do that with me. It's the nukes that must go and not me. It's the nukes that must go and not me. I expect to live here till I'm 90. Hey, it's the nukes that must go and not me. We're seizing this land with a vision. It's here that we're taking our stand. As I sing of my happy condition, surrounded by acres of clams, surrounded by acres of clams, surrounded by acres of clams. As I sing of my happy condition, surrounded by acres of clams. Bright morning star arising, 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 bright morning star arising. Day is a breaking in my soul. Day is a breaking in my soul. We'll bless the boats together. We'll bless the boats together. Bless the boats together. Day is a breaking in my soul. We'll face the mighty trident. We'll face the mighty trident. Face the mighty trident. Day is a breaking in my soul. August 12th, 1982, a bunch of people, some of them from right here, went out in small boats to meet the USS Ohio, the first Trident submarine to come up through the Strait of Juan de Fuca. And that same day, August 12th, 1982, there was a young naval recruit who was supposed to be tying up the Ohio when she came into the dock. But he did not believe in nuclear weapons. And there he was on the wharf with the band playing Anchors Away and the mayor and all the celebration. And he wanted to do something. And he didn't know what to do. And he thought and he thought and he thought maybe he would just jump into the water in front of the ship. But he thought people might write that off as an accident. So when the Ohio came in, instead of tying it up, he just fell down on his knees and started to pray. Hand in hand, the line extends all around the 9-mile fence.
30,000 women chant, bring the message home, carry Greenham home, yes, nearer home and far away, carry Greenham home. December 1984, 30,000 women surrounded the cruise missile base at Greenham Common in England, and every one of the women brought with her a symbol of what she held to be dear about life. They brought pictures of their grandkids, their baby's first shoes, poems they wrote, and they hung them on every inch of that 9-mile fence. And then at 2 in the afternoon of that day, they all joined hands in a 9-mile circle. And one of the women said, it was at that moment I realized that we had the power to change it. Singing voices ringing higher, weave a dove into the wire. In our hearts a blazing fire, bring the message home. Carry Greenham home, yes, nearer home and far away. Carry Greenham home, carry Greenham home, yes, nearer home and far away. Carry Greenham home. Pust vigda budjet samse, pust vigda budjet neba, pust vigda budjet mama, pust vigda buduya. May there always be sunshine, may there always be blue skies. May there always be mama, may there always be me. They sing that song everywhere you go in the Soviet Union. And everywhere you go, you see these great billboards, great big billboards for peace or for nuclear disarmament. I saw them myself. I guess we must have played to 50,000 people over there. Taught them all to say, refuse the cruise. Then we'd sing this song and dedicate it to the people working for peace in their country, in our country, and all over the world. Goliath was the biggest man in all the land. Dave was just a shepherd with a steady hand. But when the king says, has anybody got a plan? Little David said, yes, I do. Oh, glory, how happy I am. Oh, glory, how happy I am. I see the Spirit moving in the land. Do you feel it? Yes, I do. Let's hear it now. Oh, glory, how happy I am. Oh, glory, how happy I am. I see the Spirit moving in the land. Do you feel it?
Yes, I do.
Now that is entirely too Unitarian, ladies and gentlemen. I want to get a little Baptist into it here. Oh, glory, how happy I am. Come on now. Oh, glory, how happy I am. I see the Spirit moving in the land. Do you feel it?
Yes, I do.
All right. Now the Lord said, Moses, here's your traveling plan. Oh, you ain't gonna live to see the promised land. Promise me, Mo, that you'll do what you can. Lord, he said,
yes I do.
Here we go. Oh, glory, how happy I am. Oh, glory, how happy I am. I see the Spirit moving in the land. Do you feel it?
Yes, I do.
In Russian now. Oh, небо как я счастлив, новая жизнь грядет, не так ли? Я тоже сам. Now if you love your home, and gotta let her know, and if you love this planet, gotta let it show, 'cause like David, like Moses, like a Jericho, promise me now.
Yes, I do.
The walls come tumbling. Oh, glory, how happy I am.
Yeah, that's enough of that, because I'm not that happy. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. I'm Robert. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Those were some ancient chanties from Boston's Home Remedy for Nuclear War and Related Ailments. Medley all over the world, the eagle and the kiwi, acres of clams, bright morning star horizon, carry Greenham home, may there always be sunshine, and of course, oh glory, how happy I am. Yeah, a little Pete Seeger tradition there, or Peggy Seeger, or whatever you will. Here's some more interviews from the street, which actually it's interviews from the Red Church, and then finally from yesterday's, I guess it was the day before yesterday's shindig in the park, when we kind of wanted to find out what people were experiencing from the police, as well as what they thought were some basic rights that needed to be restored and reaffirmed. We're going to play a little bit of that. I think I'm going to run out of time, but I will be coming back on Sunday to continue this endless process. Or possibly you'll get to hear a tape of me from 5 years ago, which could be even more exciting. Stay tuned.
One of the men that died, Jamie, you actually found him?
Yes.
And how did you find him?
And what we're listening to now is a man who says that last year the two people who lived next to him in the supported housing died, and their bodies weren't found until several days later. He's suggesting some kind of incompetence and mismanagement by the owners of the property. I should say the program directors. He talks a bit about it. I thought the interview was concluded, but he actually gave me a little more. So this is a little more on that subject.
Well, first, me and the next-door neighbor, Billy, we had been talking. We hadn't seen Jamie in 3 days. And then we peeked through the curtain outside, and we saw him spread eagle, face down on his bed. All right? Then we went and got the manager. You know, after me asking the manager 3 days and calling HPHP, something's wrong with Jamie, and they did nothing about it. Until we saw through the crack, we weren't prying or anything, we were worried, and he was dead.
And what was the diagnosis of what he died of?
Heart attack.
And what about the other person who died?
Heart attack.
And what do you attribute this to? How old were these two?
One was in her 60s, the other was in his mid-40s.
So you wouldn't call these killings, you'd call these natural deaths?
Natural deaths that could have been prevented. They were in Nuevo Sol, which was subsidized housing, which we were supposed to be looked after, watched after. That's why we were there. We have trouble, you know, mindset problems, psychological problems, whatever. But these people died unnecessarily, and they're hiding it. They're hiding the deaths.
And you'd like to see that whole process change?
It should be exposed.
Now, has there been any improvements in Nuevo Sol since?
No, they've been robbed, they've been broken into, and they hide it.
I thank you for the beginning of the expose.
This is the truth.
Thank you, Todd. We're talking with Bernardo Gonzalez. And Bernardo, you say that out at the homeless lack of services center, as I call it, there's an actual notice posted about the police intentions?
Yeah, I went this morning to the shelter. There's a notice in yellow that it says that they're going to be doing this. They assign a special task to turn down all the camps all over the city, in the river, the railroads, and stuff like that. And they also are asking people and the neighbors, whoever sees somebody camping, or they know somebody camping somewhere, to let them know, and it's going to be the first priority to come over and take care of that.
How nice. And are you yourself living outdoors?
Yeah, but I'm staying far away from here, so I don't have that kind of problem. But I know I have a lot of friends that live around here, and I know it's going to be hard for them, you know, to find another place to stay. Do they want to force people to come into the city and start, you know, to be in the outside of the city?
Maybe they can all camp on the city hall grounds.
That would be nice. You know, where else is going to go? They don't let nobody camp in the beach. They don't let you camp in the woods. Where else are you going to go? Come into the city, go behind businesses, in the streets, in the parks.
I think they want you to move to Hawaii.
Well, they give me a plane ticket. I might go there.
They want you to swim, I think.
I don't think that's going to work.
No, but then they probably don't care if you arrive or not.
They don't care. They just want to, you know, push people away from here, but, you know, this place is very nice.
Hey, John.
Most of, you know, people living outside, they behave. I wouldn't say, you know, some of the guys, they don't. But most of them, you know, we just try to, you know, to live, enjoy life, respect everybody, and just, you know, we're human beings, just in different positions. That's doesn't matter if we have money or not, or we don't have any money. We're all equal. We all belong in this world, and we can, you know, live whatever we can, the way we can, and the way we want. Well, as long as we don't bother nobody else.
How long have you been outside yourself?
About 6 months.
And you did this because you decided it would be wonderful to live outside?
I have my problems, you know, I'm dealing with that. You know, I'm trying to deal with, you know, that to make my situation better. But, you know, it's not that easy. When you lose everything, it's hard to start from the bottom, especially when nobody give you help or the help that you need.
How does the homeless lack of services center treat you, the homeless service center? Have you gotten much help out there?
Oh, it's very nice. You know, they have case workers and stuff like that, but it's so many people that they need to help, you know, but and they ain't that many opportunities out there.
Have you tried to get on their waiting list to be in a program?
No, not really. I mean, I try to work my own, so get out of this situation by myself, and it's working okay so far. You know, a lot of help here, but it will help more if the people start complaining about the homeless, you know, offer them their jobs, you know, or something. You know, there's a lot of work around here. They have a company, they have a restaurant or whatever, and they start, you know, putting out a newspaper. They can go to the shelters and ask some of the guys. They are very well qualified people to work in different areas. You have, you know, people to work in offices, construction, restaurants, any kind of work. The only thing you do is a lot of us, we just need a little push, you know, a little hand to, you know, get us out of the situation.
What kind of work were you doing before?
I work in restaurants. I work in construction, so I can work in many places.
So you're looking for work yourself?
Yeah. So I'm doing day labor right now, so I work 2 or 3 days out of the week. It's not enough right now, but sooner or later we're going to find, you know, some stable job.
And then we have this thing coming up tomorrow on the 17th, which I handed you a flyer about, the Homeless Bill of Rights. I take it you're a Spanish speaking person.
Yes, I do.
If you can pass the word on a otra, se puede, if they want to come, it'll be good. My español es muy pequeño, pero, you know, puedo, I'll try, you know. And it's tomorrow, it's hot soup, it's at 2:00, it's at the park, and it's across from between the county building and the lawn bowling area, if you know where that is.
I know where it's at.
And of course, this was on Tuesday, so don't come there tomorrow and expect hot soup and exciting discussion.
I can give you some flyers, but these are, of course, you say, so for folks who are speaking Spanish, day labor really is their only option?
Nah, I will say most of it, because it's hard labor, you know, and that's what they want them for. They don't care if they speak English or not. They usually want somebody to work hard. That, you know, you see in their restaurants, it's mostly Hispanics. They work hard and you don't need much English, you know. As long as you know how to move your hands, stuff like that, that's what they want. So, you know, it's a lot of help that they can get around here, but it's not too many places to offer it, you know, like English as a second language. They have a lot of free time. They can learn. That's the way I learned, you know, when I have free time, I learn English. I came to this country like about 23 years ago. I didn't know any English, so little by little I learned.
Yeah, you sound like you picked it up.
Yeah, so I have very good jobs, you know, but, you know, I'm down my luck right now. But when I can, you know, get up on my feet and then I'm just, you know, being like a regular citizen. But I didn't want to forget what I went through, because now I appreciate what I used to have. I see both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
The bad side and the good side. People on the other side, and they always on the good side, they don't know what's going on down here. And you see people, you know, lying down the street, and they, you know, they're bumps. They're, you know, they don't know what's going on. There's lawyers, there's technicians, there's computer experts, you know, they just went down their lot, you know. They don't know what happened in their lives, you know, sentimentally, physically, or mentally, you never know.
We've been talking with
Bernardo Gonzalez.
Thank you, Bernardo.
Thank you.
So I'm circulating this flyer, and I'm talking to a man who says his camp was, in fact, destroyed by the Santa Cruz Police Department. How could they do such a thing? But this is our police. They wouldn't do that, would they?
Well, I hear what you're saying. Rather than answer...
But I want to know what they did do. I'm being sarcastic and ironic, but what happened?
What actually happened was that before July 10th, the park rangers came to our camp on about every other day for the month or two that we had the camp, and told us, thanks for picking up the camp, and as long as you keep things clean, everything's just fine.
Where was your camp, if you want to say?
Yeah, along the levee, that's along the San Lorenzo River, just on the other side of Water Street Bridge from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
We had about five people. And it started with three of us, and the time the park ranger started talking to us, that I can remember, there was about five of us, and they went about saying, no problem, no problem, no problem, as long as you don't have a semi-permanent camp or a permanent camp. And they didn't like the fact that one or two, I think there was two of them, that had semi-permanent camps.
What would that be?
Where was it? Or who?
What would that be? Is it semi-permanent? What is that?
They were visible umbrellas and left camping gear, although no tents. They were blankets and sleeping bags and clothing, things like that, regular belongings that were left there in places without being picked up every day. I personally took my stuff away on a bicycle every day, so they didn't have a problem with me, and I was the one that picked up most of the garbage, so they liked me a lot. No tickets from the park rangers, but what I'm getting at is that after this date of July 10th, I got 3 tickets in a week, and now it's about, I don't know, it's about the 17th or so now, and I've decided not to keep going down there and getting tickets, of course. I've moved out, or so has everybody else had to, because the police have been coming down now, like I say, after July 10th. They've been coming down a couple times a day and look and see if anybody's down there, and if so, give them tickets.
Are they offering to give them another place to sleep legally?
Oh, nothing like that. Nothing like that. They're just saying you can't do it here. Isn't that interesting? No matter where you are, it's like you can't do it here. And if you ask them, well, I'm not really camping. There's no campfire, and there's no camp stove, and there's no camping tent, and it's not a camp.
They prefer you simply not sleep in the night.
Yeah,
perhaps you can sleep during...
Just saying sleeping is illegal, and I find that a violation of my rights.
Now, have you gotten tickets during the day or just at night?
Day and night.
What time of the day did you get the tickets?
Most of them in the afternoon. I think it was twice in the afternoon.
And were they... have you got any of the tickets with you?
No, I threw them away. I think they're garbage. Okay. I think the whole idea is garbage.
And how many officers are involved?
Each time there was a different officer, and each... Well, first time there were two. The chief ranger, her name's Heather Ryder. She was with Officer... I need to know his name. Something... It's like the baseball player's name. It's not Sandusky. I can't remember.
Winston, Warren, Baker, Corbis.
I almost remember his name. I can't remember it.
Okay, there were two of them. And previously, this head ranger had been nice to you and then not attempted to criminalize your sleeping?
Not only that, but said it's just fine. As long as you keep it up, you can be here. Suddenly, things changed. Without really letting us know it was illegal in advance, it wasn't really a warning. It was just, here's a ticket and don't come back or we'll steal your, take your stuff, really.
Did they say that?
Yeah, we'll throw away your stuff.
Who said that?
The policeman who was with Heather Ryder, and then the next policeman, two of them said it.
And there was another two police officers who came, or there were just individual cops who came after that?
After that, there was, like I say, Heather Ryder came with that one cop, and then there were...
Again, we're talking with
Robert Jackson.
And Robert, you say that after you got this initial get out of here, but we're not going to tell you where you can be, don't sleep even during the day warning?
You can even be down there. In fact, the third ticket was I was only down there briefly to pick up a ground cloth that I had left down there. It's the only thing I'd left. And someone, a policeman had spotted me from the levee. I don't know his name. And he was by himself, and he stopped his car and gave me a ticket simply for being down there.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it was only down there for 2 minutes.
So I expect you to be showing up tomorrow at the Constitutional Convention for the Bill of Rights for the Homeless tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
I certainly hope so. The more people that get there, the better.
Thank you, and keep the reports coming in.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. So we're talking with...
Michael Covell.
And Michael, you say you came down here in March?
March, I relocated Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
And I put about $1,200 in my truck. That's how much repairs are needed. And so one night it's having trouble, and I make an emergency park. And because it was making some terrible noise, and I got woke up about 7 in the morning, got a ticket for illegal camping, which is about $200. So my next step, of course, is to fight it and to show proof. But there's obviously a big agenda here. I mean, even I got hit with it shortly after I moved here. So, yeah.
Where were you parked when they gave you this ticket?
I had to immediately park on Highway 9. The minute that the truck started making noise, I just stopped and waited till daylight. And I even explained this to him in the morning. And he wrote the ticket up anyways.
This was a Santa Cruz police officer?
Yes, it was like a park police officer.
A park ranger?
Yeah, that type, yeah.
And what did he say to you?
Well, He was apparently it was a busy morning for him. I was the second person that day, and I told him exactly what I was doing and why I parked there, and even turned the car on for him. And he could hear that there was problems. And I said, I'm going to try to make it down to the repair shop that I already had taken it too many times to get some more repairs on it. And so it was obvious that my story was true. I needed there was an emergency park. Plus, there was no signs there anyway, so there was no reason for me not to be able to park there until daylight.
He wrote you a ticket.
Wrote me a ticket.
What was the ticket for?
Illegal camping, $195.
And what time did he actually approach you?
It was about 7:30 in the morning.
And did he find you sleeping in the vehicle? Cautions, admission to sleeping would be admission to a crime. In Santa Cruz, it's illegal to sleep between 11 and 8:30 in your own vehicle, even if legally parked anywhere in the city whatsoever on any public property.
Oh, well, then maybe...
Criminal.
Maybe that's what he wrote it for, but, I mean...
He caught you right in the act, didn't he? He got you, finally.
He said he caught me. I had to wait till morning because...
You should have slept throughout the day. Then you would have been okay. You know, stuck your foot out the window and, you know, taken off your shoes and slept during the day.
Yeah, really. I mean, it was like I'd been there for a total of 4 hours because it was like about 3 a.m. when I finally went to the back of my truck and waited till daylight. And he got me before I woke up at about 7:30.
So were you alone or was someone with you?
I was alone. Well, I had my bird with me.
And what did your bird say about all this?
The bird is really handles the situation better than I did, so she's really cool.
And what is the name of this well-tempered bird?
Mesha.
Mesha.
My traveling.
Mellow Mesha, perhaps?
She's a really good bird. She's handled this move better than I have. But I've got proof. I should be able to take this to court. And...
Talk to Steve Plaich, the guy I mentioned in the... I spoke earlier here inside the Catholic... it's not Catholic, it's Episcopal, Calvary Episcopal. And Steve Plaich, who's serving bagels, the tall guy with the silver hair, is also works for the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project. Just go up to him and tell him you'd like some help with your ticket.
And in theory, for those who want to actually fight back against this abusive crackdown on homeless survival behavior, people should go over to the Homeless Lack of Services Center and sign up for their waiting list. And then any citations given to people for sleeping at night or camping during the day should be, according to the law passed by City Attorney John Barisoni through the City Council back in the fall of 2010, dismissed. We'll see if that actually happens or if they aren't doing that now because they're responding to the know-nothing bigotry of Take Back Santa Cruz types who are trying to run homeless people out of town.
You bet. I mean, I'm just an example of, I'm not technically a homeless person here, but their agenda is so big here that even I got a ticket, and I was earnestly just, actually that night I was a part of this coffee shop, and I was going to meet a musician that night.
Calvary Episcopal, and you play music here?
Yes, I volunteer my time for music here, yeah.
And what kind of work do you do when you're employed?
I've been a musician for many years, actually, employed, so I'm looking for that now, but, you know, we'll take anything at this point.
What kind of music are we talking?
I do solo piano.
Wow. Like you can't really sing solo piano.
I do sing if they're singing aloud.
Give us a sample, perhaps?
Well, I'm going to go in there now and sing a few tunes. So
maybe we'll catch you in the tape recording.
You should be able to catch me in there. I'm going to go play with John.
Well, we've been talking with...
Michael Covell.
And Michael, do talk to Steve Plaich. And for those who are listening, his number is 466-6078. 466-6078. And he's quite accessible by cell phone. You can often reach him. If not, he tends to call back and pick up his messages, and at least sometimes.
Very tall with big tennis shoes. He's easy to catch.
Yeah, he's a wiry kind of guy. Glib as well, I might add.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Well, we're talking with Joe Pace. And Joel, you say five citations have been given to you?
Yeah, five camping tickets.
And in the course of how long?
In about 2 months.
And was it all in the same place, same officer?
Yes, I've been camping in the same place for a year.
Yeah.
And it's right on the cliff of the ocean.
Are you revealing your secret spot? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret. Everybody's invited to come occupy the cliffs. I want you to come to the beach with me. I want you to come to the cliffs. I want you to see how beautiful it is. It's the most beautiful place in the world. I've been all over the world, and this is it.
So the same cops
every time? Or
pretty much the same cops every time. They've gotten to a point where they're actually tired of giving me the camping tickets.
Yeah. And how do you know that?
Well, they actually stopped giving them to me.
When was the last time you got a ticket?
About a month ago. And I'm still camped in the same place every night.
Now, are you visible from the road or the street?
Oh, yeah. I'm right on the cliff. I stay there with my van with my girlfriend, and we've been there for a whole year, same place. Our beloved ocean, our beloved beach.
How do the neighbors regard this?
Well, you know, they've got their million-dollar houses, and we're right in front of their million-dollar house with our $1,000 van, so you can imagine how
the discrepancy there.
Yeah. But it is our beloved ocean. We have to protect it. It belongs to us. If you want to occupy it, come to the cliffs with me. Come to the ocean and see the most beautiful place in the world.
You want to describe your van so people can come and vandalize it?
Well, no. But my van has been vandalized.
Well, what was the van for but vandalized?
Right. When then we're taking it to Burning Van.
I see. We've been talking with
Joe.
Thank you. You're saying you've gotten six tickets, they're backlogged, so you haven't gotten... What's been the consequence?
Well, when the cops give you the ticket, they say this is going directly to collections, which means you have a chance to pay the ticket right away. If you want to fight the ticket, they have a whole year to bring you into court. So if you get these tickets, you must keep checking in if you're going to fight them every month so you don't get a failure to appear or failure to pay. That's how they get you. In the meantime, they can't prosecute you for these camping tickets. They're just too backlogged.
What they do instead is they kind of sneak past you. They have a camping ticket comes up in court, you're not there, and they zip send it south for failure to pay.
Right, so continue to check every month or every week even. Check in with your county clerk.
Good advice. And a pain in the ass as well, I might add.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Thank you. We're talking to a writer. Your name, sir?
Jack the Rebel. You talked to me on the app.
I did. You had just come in. You had your stuff on your car, and you're from North Carolina.
Charlotte, born and raised. I served here in the U.S. Army Infantry, 7th Infantry
and
Division.
We played your actual interview. Yes, we did on Sunday. It's archived.
I'm sorry. I couldn't find the station.
You can always go back and look. It'll be on a computer file forever. So.
Great. Listen.
On the net. And if you gave... Look at that card I gave you. Did I give you a card?
I think you did, Mr. Norris. And thank you for your everything that you are doing here. Listen, my mother, she had to stand up for women's rights in the 60s when my father walked away from five children and he was not going to pay one red penny in child support. My mother went in front of the judge and demanded, how could this man create and bring five children into the world and leave them and not even... She was a pioneer by...
And we're going to hear more from... more from Jack the Rebel on Sunday when he will be back, as will I. At least his voice will be back. 9:30 in the morning here on 101.3 FM. But coming up next, it's that creamy, dreggy guy, Uncle Dennis, with cream to the dregs, where he's dragging us all...
Creamy?
You're creaming in the... You're going to be some creaming and dreaming. Is that the story, Uncle Dennis? He's going to cream on, as he says, and I'm sure that you'll be able to cream with him if you catch my drift. Some people have unusual approaches to these shows. I take a somewhat less creamy approach. I will, however, be available at 831-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and you can leave me a message if the police are giving you lots of tickets, or even just one, or even just...
Just
harassing you. Pay no attention to the man behind the microphone over there.
If you got a ticket, you deserved it.
There you go. Now you can believe Mr. Whatever his name is, the next guy who comes on the show, or you can listen to my sound and solid advice. Call Huff and say, that's enough. In any case, that's all I've got for you now. You can also find me on the website at huffsantacruz.org. Our website's getting a little bit updated. And you can also join the Huff email and get all kinds of questionable emails about homeless civil rights or lack of civil rights kind of news breaks or breaking news, if you want. I think that's all I got for now. But Uncle Dennis...
Breaking, Robert?
Uncle Dennis will be breaking wind shortly.
Great minds fart together.
He drinks a lot of beer, and he speaks in a rather vulgar tongue. But remember, Uncle Dennis needs your help because he does. It's as simple as that.
No, free radio needs your help. And your money.
And free radio also needs your help. You can give us a contribution at... Or you can contribute as many times as you like at freakradio.org, and it's easy to do if you have money. That is, if you don't, we don't want to hear from you. We don't give a shit about you, and we couldn't care less. Uncle Dennis said...
If we don't get money, we're just going to go off the air.
There you go. See, it's money, 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 or we'll go off the air. Have you heard that before? Isn't it getting a little boring hearing that? Well, Uncle Dennis will be repeating it a number of times during his show. So best thing, best advice, turn off your radio right now, and you won't have to listen to that kind of crap. On the other hand, you won't be hearing his delightful music and the sound of his drinking his new... Is it a mystery label, or shall I tell them the name of this booze
here? Let me introduce this one.
He's going to introduce. So thank you, and next time, Sunday at 9:30, join me, or 423.
Or don't.
Yeah, there'll be a long silence, but then Uncle Dennis will, in fact, say something. At least that's my hope.
Hope. What you got in here, Robert? Is this your CD? No? Well, let's just take it out of here. It ain't you, huh? So let's see. What am I going to play here?
Your listeners are waiting, Uncle Dennis.
They're waiting for something. I'm getting it together here. You know, this is supposed to be a rock and roll music show, so I thought I'd let the people who were listening to you... You know, have time to, you know, turn off their radio, walk away, and
walk away.
Yeah, just put down the radio and walk away.
Put down, put your hands on your head.
Anyway. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm Uncle Dennis. We're going to be playing rock and roll from now until 11 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, of course, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And we will open the beer of the week. And, of course, coming up at 10 o'clock is the ultimate vinyl hour. And we will be getting back to vinyl this week. So stay tuned to Free Radio.
Starfleet to Scout Ship. Will you please give me your position? Over.
I am in orbit around the planet, the third planet of the sun known in the sun.
May this be Earth. Over.